We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
From the shores of Malibu, where the waves are pumping, to the Great Wall of China, and back to the streets of... I'm not announcing the show. Where's the show this week?
Las Vegas.
Las Vegas, where the UFC is coming. We are live. This is It's Time Radio, the show where we talk about what you think about, but maybe you're afraid to voice. Do not worry. We will voice it for you. We talk about everything on It's Time. Sex, drugs, rock and roll, UFC, film, TV, politics, and we're going to talk about the beautiful Laura Sanko. Hi, Laura. How are you?
Hello. I'm well. How are you? I'm not sure I knew what I signed up for between the sex, drugs, rock and roll, and politics. You're making me nervous, Bruce.
No, I don't want to make you nervous. It's just it's no holds barred radio, and it's time radio. That's all I can tell you.
I got you.
And we're very politically correct. So we'll be okay. Everything's good.
Is it possible to be politically correct in today's world?
I have no idea.
No one knows where that line is.
I don't know. I mean, between the thing, I would love to be a stand-up comedian today. You can't let it fly anymore, right?
Seriously, yeah. You're making someone laugh, you're making someone else cry, and vice versa.
Yeah.
I know, and it's like, you know, it's the day and age of, as they always say, dot your I's and cross your T's. You got to dot your I's, cross your T's, and like a poker player where you take time to think before you make your move, you got to sit back and think before you make your speech.
We're all in this environment right now where we have to have some sort of filter, right? Like you make one tiny mistake and you're canceled. I like to think that I have a scrolling marquee, through my vision, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna say that. But I will tell you, as I get older, it gets a lot slower, and I just say a lot of shit that I don't really proofread, unfortunately, sometimes. So this is my pre-apology to everyone.
All right.
Well, we're all old enough to remember a day and time when everything we said wasn't read by hundreds of thousands of people.
I mean, seriously, could you guys imagine growing up in high school on social media? There's no way.
No.
No, thank you. No, thank you.
And ask me if I would want to, and I'm going to say no.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
No. The age of innocence. Yeah, is,
I mean, you're not allowed to be innocent anymore.
It's not there anymore.
Yeah.
You're not allowed. I would like to go back in time and see Laura Sanko in high school because she used to have these awesome braids. I saw like a photo of your 16th birthday or something. Yep. I think Laura Sanko and I would have like gone to a Korn concert or something together.
We 100% would have gone to Korn concert together, and we probably would have been in a band together. And
oh God, I was the worst singer of all time, Laura.
Well, I was the worst guitar player of all time, so it would have been perfect.
That's awesome.
What were you the worst of, Laura?
Guitar player. I mean, not well at all. Like I almost don't even want to put that out there, but yes, I had a little Fender Strat and fancied myself a bit of an electric guitar player.
Okay.
But
so what was the one song you could play?
A lot of power chords.
Like, could you play like Smoke on the Water?
Honestly, Metallica is what I loved.
Really?
I could never play like the solos or anything like that. Just the really basic bar chords. I could bang out the tune roughly.
So you were doing like Enter Sandman. Boom. Yes. No. Nice.
Yes.
Let me tell you, I was 17, I think it was. I was living in Malibu. I was going to Santa Monica High School, and I wanted to play the guitar. A little bit of impatience. I went and bought a Gibson SG, which I wish to God I still had today because it's just gone up so much in value. Bought a PV amp, had my buddy come over, give me some lessons. He was in a band. But, man, when I wasn't, you know, Jimmy Page, like the Led Zeppelin guitarist, within 6 months, I was just frustrated. I didn't finish.
Yeah.
You know, and I wish I would have continued. I just wanted to be a rock star with that guitar, just in my own bedroom, just in front of the mirror, just, you know, like letting it loose.
That's why I was a singer, because I tried to play the guitar. Well, I had an acoustic guitar, and I couldn't play that because it wasn't electric. So clearly, you know, I need to get the electric guitar. And I, too, got a little Fender Stratocaster. And then turns out, if you can't play the acoustic guitar, you can't play the electric guitar either. So then I just started screaming.
You know what I always... Go ahead,
oh, sorry. Go ahead. No, I was going to say my one moment where I actually, because I barely had those moments either, Bruce, but the one time I actually was like, oh my gosh, this sounds pretty freaking awesome. I had my amp cranked up in my little whammy bar, and I Jimi Hendrixed the Star Spangled Banner so hard.
Wow. But
it's a pretty easy song on the guitar because it's one note at a time.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. I'm going to step off for 2 seconds to show you something. Hold on.
All right. Uh-oh.
You know, Bruce goes on these adventures sometimes, Laura, and I never know when he's going to come back. And when he does come back, I never know what he's going to have.
It's going to happen. It's very exciting.
Yeah. I mean, he's such a collector. So I just, oh my God, there it is.
Oh, of course.
You know, Jared, the fighter Jared, right?
Of course.
Well, his brother makes guitars. So he made me.
Look at that.
Oh my gosh.
Isn't that beautiful?
That is gorgeous.
Is that one of one, Buff?
You have to learn to play, Bruce. It's never too late.
I know. No, I've got the amp over here, whatever. I play around with it once in a while. I'm just not that great.
I'm wondering how much that's going to go for on eBay when he signs it.
One of a kind.
That's amazing.
Had to show you. Had to share.
Look at that. The octagon in the back.
It's even got, yeah.
Dang.
So that's Jared Vandera's brother?
Yes.
Or a different Jared, yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
Say again.
She was Vandera
or different Jared?
Yeah, second one.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, Buffer, like how many chords of Face the Pain do you know?
None.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's a Stairway to Heaven. It's some David Bowie songs. And it's all the stuff that's easy as hell to play. Okay?
Right. Yeah.
I still can't play them all. I can just play little riffs, but I feel good when I do it.
I can play Seven Nation Army by the White Stripes and that's it.
There we go.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
So that's our music portion of the show right
there.
Oh,
man. What would our band be called if we were a three-piece?
Ooh, that's a fantastic question.
Yeah. I mean, Buffer's the front man. He's got to be, right?
Oh, I'd be the singer.
Yeah, you got to be the singer. Laura's going to be the guitar player.
Turgid Biscuit.
What is it?
Turgid Biscuit.
Okay. All just right. Kidding. Why not? All the song kind of go boom boom wiki boom boom wee.
And then, well, I just want to thank while I'm on the air, I want to thank Jared Gordon's brother because he did a great job with that guitar. So nice. All good,
awesome.
One of many collectibles to be had. But speaking of collectibles, we keep collecting shows left and right. They've been nonstop, Laura. You know, when you think about it, the power of these shows that we've had have just been incredible.
It's been an amazing run. I mean, I feel like we've been busier than ever. I don't know if they're adding weeks in the calendar every year, but I feel like every year we do more shows, which seems like at some point you're going to run out of weeks, right?
There's 52 weeks in the calendar year, and it feels like the calendar for the UFC is at least 75.
Easily.
Yeah. How many trips are you on, Laura? How many shows are you working a year generally?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question. It kind of depends on how you look at it too, because I rack up a lot doing contender series.
Right,
so
that's
10 right there. And then probably 35, but that's with contender.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. Like there literally probably are 75 fight weeks, you know, coinciding at the same time in a single calendar year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Think about it. We talk about traveling. Think about Dana, you know, whether he's hopping on a private jet or not. I mean, the guy's just nonstop between Power Slap and UFC.
I don't know how he does it.
And it's incredible. You know, his F It Friday videos, which crack me up, you know, he's putting out. But doesn't he look good, Laura?
He looks amazing, Bruce. I can't tell you how many people I don't know why I'm so excited about it, but I think it's just because I can tell it's like this whole new health revolution for him. But like he looks like a different person. And it's amazing to see someone make that change at 53 and it's freaking shredded and he just looks so much healthier than he did even a couple of years ago.
Yeah, he was raving to me at the last show. I was asking about the cleanse that he did. And he's never done a cleanse before, you know, when he fasted for 3 days. And I've done cleanses too. I mean, they're not easy to do. Once you get into it, you know, you follow the line. But kudos to Dana. I mean, the transformation is like ridiculous.
He gave me one and I'm scared to do it.
Well, all I can say is
he gave me the seven day rainbow cleanse. And I was thinking it was just the 1 day colon cleanse, which I'm all aboard for that. Like that I can dedicate a weekend to, but a week, I'm like, I don't know when I'm going to, that's a lot.
I don't think I could go without eating for a week. I mean, if you have to, you do, but I think he told me he only did it for 3 days. He did it for 3 days.
Yeah, I think his was just the colon one as well, but the rainbow one is the colon plus the gallbladder plus the liver. So I might try to just narrow it down into like just the colon part of it. But he described it as very, he said it was like, he's like, I've never felt better in my life. He said it was pretty intense, but I've never felt better. So
yeah, the video he releases, like, you know, my sleep apnea is gone. This is gone. That is gone. I mean, it's a miracle treatment. So proof is in the pudding, and he's showing the pudding. So it's all there. Or actually, no, he's showing that there's no pudding anymore.
No pudding. No pudding whatsoever.
Man, a life without Kansas pudding.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, TJ.
I was going to say, a life without pudding. I don't know if I want that life.
Are you a pudding eater?
It's funny. I actually made pudding yesterday. It's for the first time in a long time. Like, one of my favorite treats is like Jell-O cook and serve pudding. Where you cook it on the stove. You know, everyone does like the snack pack or the instant pudding.
My mom
pudding.
Makes stovetop pudding.
I love that little layer of like skin.
Yep, the skin.
Yeah. Oh, it's my favorite.
Banana pudding. Sign me up.
Yeah. I'm not a big dessert eater, but I will say the banana pudding, banana cream pie, just banana. I love bananas and blueberries. My two favorite fruits.
Yes.
Yeah. Blueberries taste like dirt.
No.
No.
Great for you.
You're having the wrong blueberries.
I mean, every blueberry I've ever had.
Just put some honey on them. Get the big juicy ones.
You gotta get the big ones from Target. Target has ones that look like, I mean, they look like tiny apples, and they're the sweetest thing ever. They're delicious.
All right. I'll check it out.
While we're on the subject of food, I love power breakfast, and I either have like protein pancakes, egg whites, and maybe turkey bacon or chicken or whatever usually. But this morning, I'll show you how I eat really good blueberry granola, banana, tons of blueberries, cranberries, scoop of vegan protein powder, lots of honey, and almond milk. Mix it all up, you know, and the energy gets right into you. It's like almost immediate.
Sounds delicious. You want to come cook for me, Bruce?
Absolutely, Laura. No problem. You got it.
All right.
Your husband too. Your little boy too. By the way, your little boy's adorable. Okay.
I saw him
on the show
last
weekend. He looks so much like his dad.
Yeah, you know? He does. Everybody thinks he looks like me until they see him next to Nathan.
Well, he does look like you when you see it, but when you put him next to his dad, it's like, wow, you know?
Yeah.
And then
he's got my coloring, but Nathan's features, I think, more than anything. It's funny because Nathan's half Lebanese. So like, if you ever seen my husband, very dark hair, pretty dark skin. And like, I mean, if you see him now, the second he gets in the sun, he's just like, I mean, he's dark.
Really?
And, but my son is still obviously very blonde and blue-eyed. And my husband's blue-eyed as well, or green-eyed, I should say. So it's, I don't know. We'll see what he ends up looking like coloring-wise, but he's a cute kid.
Got a lot of time yet, Laura. It'll all come together.
Yeah. My friends were so excited to meet you. And every single one of them were like, oh my gosh, Bruce Buffer's the nicest person in the world. He took pictures with our kids. They could not stop talking about how gracious you were. So thank you.
Thank you. Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. You know, just that's part of the deal when we're at the show. I mean, it's not just our work. You know, sure, I announce and get out, but I say half the time I'm dealing with fans and trying to keep everybody happy, you know, all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah.
And especially the kids, you know, when I'm running out, even if I got to be in the octagon in like 20 seconds, you see that little hand coming out.
I know.
Crowd and little kid. Yeah. It got to stop.
I know.
And I've told the story before. I'll tell you one of the main reasons, the emphasis I have on that. When I was 5 years old, living in Philadelphia, and my brother was seven, we were in a Marriott hotel, and a large black man walked through the front door, right? And I recognized him from TV. And I said to my dad, look. And my dad goes, well, go say hello, right? And because my dad always taught me never miss an opportunity. So I went over, said hi, and he talked to me for about 10 or 15 minutes, leaning down and talking to me. His name was Cassius Clay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Always had an effect on me. You know, you can have an effect on a young child, boy or girl, by doing something like that. And I've seen many, I don't like the word celebrity, as TJ knows, so I think it's been cheapened over the years with social media and everything. But I appreciate the respect, but I mean, I consider everybody equal. But you talk about celebrities or people of renowned, you know, front page news stories or whatever. My God, somebody asked you for an autograph. They asked to say hi. It takes 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's our job.
Unless it's the autograph hounds that have a stack of 8x10s and they want you to sign all of them and please don't personalize them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I love the fact when they come up to you with those books and it's like, I just ask them, so when is this going to be on eBay? Oh, no, this is for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll check it like 5 days later and there it is. Cause I know how to write little notes. There it is right there. You know?
Right. Yeah.
I just laugh at it now. I don't care. They can do what
it's
they want.
It's whatever. Yeah.
It is whatever. So your husband said that Kansas City was his hometown or your hometown?
My hometown. I wasn't born here, but I've lived here since I was seven. So basically my hometown. I lived in New York for 2 years, but other than that, KC.
KC?
Yep.
The crowd loved it. They had a great time at the show.
They did. They absolutely, it'd been so long since the UFC had been to Kansas City, and it's an interesting market because we have, as TJ knows, a lot of MMA here. You'd be surprised the number of regional level shows between, now I know Invicta's in Denver a lot now, but for many, many years, Invicta, Titan, FAC, Blue Court, like there were so many regional level shows that sometimes I think it gets hard for the average fan to distinguish. I mean, obviously the brand UFC speaks for itself, but I guess what I'm saying is like, sometimes if you just want to go watch fights, sometimes the smoke market can get oversaturated. So I was really happy to see that the place was, you know, sold out and everybody was super excited. And I thought it was funny that we were getting so much shit on Twitter.
What did we get shit on Twitter for?
We got shit on Twitter for, okay, so it was the Pedro Munhoz. Who did he fight again? Once I'm past a show,
Chris
Gutierrez.
Chris Gutierrez. Thank you. Yes. And it was a very technical fight, but it wasn't like a slobber knocker. It was very technical. And there was one point where I think the audience started booing. And Zach, our boss, Bruce, texted me. He's like, what is going on? And he's sending me all these tweets of people like, Kansas City fans are terrible. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, here's the thing about Kansas City fans. We are used to going to Chiefs games. And you know what you do at a Chiefs game? You boo everything that other team does. Everything. So it's not meant to be an offense. We're just getting involved.
I tell you, one of the things that bugs me a lot, and I think it's because the fighters deliver such high level action fights that when it gets low level in so many words, yet highly skilled from what we can see with our knowledge, it's not enough for them, you know? Yeah. I mean, sure, there's fights that get dull, but I can't stand when they boo. And again, I'll tell you a story that I've told in the show a couple of times. I used to do the King of the Cages in the early days, right? King of the Cage 2 through 11 I did. And it was about King of the Cage 4. And there were two very, very heavy, heavyweights, if you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And they were lumbering and doing their thing, but they're in there fighting. And everybody's booing and yelling and this, that, and the other. And when I read the results, I said, by the way, for all of you that booed, we have a special tournament after the fights are over. You can sign up over here. You get to fight Larry Landless, Herb Dean, and me. And we're taking your names right now. So we really appreciate it if you would stop booing and respect what these fighters are doing for your entertainment.
Yeah.
You know, I might have said it a little harsher.
Well,
but at that time, it wasn't on TV.
Yeah. You know what? A place like Saboba, Bruce, you might have been serious.
It was Saboba Casino.
You might have been serious. Yeah.
They stopped booing.
I'd stop booing too. If you're going to send Larry Landless and Herb Dean after me, not to mention Bruce Buffer, I'm going to sit on my hands for the rest of the show.
I was looking over there wondering, oh God, how many people are going to sign up for this? No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, so fans can do what they want to do. They're paying their money, but you know, I'm all about respect. So
no, I agree. I think it's just, we're so used to college sports, big, big, big college sports town and Chiefs that it's just that Midwest style, man. But I will say this, after every fight, I mean, they were excited for everybody. So I hope we come back sometime soon, but I know that we have a lot of cities that we sort of need a checklist to tick off because of everything got kind of backed up with COVID. So it might be a while, but it was fun to have you guys here.
Yeah, no, I agree too. But 20 years since we've been in Kansas City, which was it 20 years or 6?
No, no, 20 was Miami.
20 was, yes.
Miami. 20 was Miami. Yes, yeah. Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Which is even more surprising because that's a way bigger market than Kansas City.
I mean,
we've just been hitting Jacksonville, you know?
Yeah. Not only Jacksonville, you would do Hollywood, Florida, which would be not far. I mean, where I'm from, anything that's like in a 35-mile radius of downtown Minneapolis is the Twin Cities. So while it wasn't technically Miami, I mean, you were in the general area, but that Miami show, my God, what an amazing atmosphere and crowd. And I got a feeling, I mean, Dana said it, Miami makes them feel like LA, felt 10 years ago.
Yeah.
That Miami date's going to be on that calendar, I think, at least once, if not maybe even twice a year for the UFC.
I would think so. I feed off the energy of the crowd. And just, I mean, I just got so into that. Not that I'm always not into it, but it was just a real exciting night. Speaking of which, Laura, you're doing announcing, right?
Yes. Yeah. I'm doing commentating now. Yes.
How you liking? I know the commentating. The commentating, listen, you're The first, right? First female commentator for UFC?
In the modern era.
Yes, in the modern era. There was of course Kathy Long, who had the honor of calling UFC one.
Right.
But that was it. So she was just, they just had her on the first show ever. And since then, so 30 years it took to get another female at that seat. So yeah, I'm super excited to be doing it. I've got another one coming up in June. So
it's a milestone in USC history. I'm proud of you, Lori. You really work hard for this. You're so deserving for it. You're such a great role model of the UFC, you know, both the men and women both. And plus, how can you not, this is really important to me too. I love the fact that you're a fighter, you know? So when you talk, I listen, right? Not that I wouldn't listen to TJ, who is so knowledgeable, but I'm saying a fighter as a commentator is a really great asset, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you have to have some degree of firsthand touch of the sport. I think it can be done. You know, Joe obviously does an amazing job, but I think for me in particular, you know, I don't have the built-in credibility that the DCs of the world and the Michael Bispings of the world have because of just who they are, right? So I had to work really hard to kind of build that credibility and with the audience and with my other commentators as well. And that was probably the biggest, I guess, task over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. And I'm just, I'm super happy it worked out. And I really appreciate the nice messages that you've sent about that. So thank you, Bruce. It was really
kind. Oh, you're very welcome. No, it's just completely deserving. I love watching, as I like to say, the evolutionary process of someone's career, and watching you and the way you're growing is growing into it, all the different aspects. It's wonderful. And besides the fact, you're delivering, you're doing a great job. That's the key.
Thank you.
So you deserve everything.
Thank you.
How about the announcing? When you get in there and announce a fight.
No. I hate announcing, Bruce.
You hate it, really?
Yeah, and I'm not doing it anymore. They made me do that. Let's see. They made me do that the first year of Contender Series, and that was it.
Uncomfortable?
Not a fan. I love post-fight in-cage interviews. I don't mind. It's the announcing of the scorecards that I absolutely hate. I hate it.
How do you think I feel when I don't agree with them? I have to put on that poker face and deliver.
The sense of panic in me when I would look at their scorecards and I'm like, this is wrong. There's no way that this person won. And I'm in my mind, I'm like, am I reading this wrong? Did they get the name wrong? Do they think that guy is that guy? And that overwhelming sense of like, I'm about to read this out and it reflects on you because you're the one saying it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a handful of times where I was like, I can't believe I'm about to say this. And your winner by unanimous decision. Oh,
I know. And, you know, as much as I'm happy for the winner, there are these times we're inside. I almost want to shed a tear at times because I know what that one fight meant to that individual who I thought won, that's going to lose, and the effect it's going to have on their career and this, that, and the other. And maybe they're going to be bounced out of the UFC. It gets emotional at times, but you're the messenger. You just got to deliver.
You set the bar almost too high, though, I have to say. You really did. Because I can't tell you the number of messages. Because I guess I read the scores out. I'm trying to remember how many years I did that. I did that a few years. But anyway, I would get these messages like, oh my God, it's like she's just reading from a card. And I was like, yeah, because I am just reading from a card. they're like, can't you just, you know, get all... Because they don't understand. First of all, in the Apex. Second of all, I really, and I can't believe I'm blanking on her name. What is the name of the woman who announces for PFL?
Lillian Garcia?
Yes. Thank you so much for rescuing me. Of course, TJ knew that. Mm. I really admire her because I'll tell you what, it is really hard to have a big voice and to have lots of inflection modulation with a female voice because you get really shrieky really quick. And when I did the post-fight interviews for Road to UFC, and you know, you say the fighter's name as you're leaving, well, ladies and gentlemen, da da da. It's Zach kept getting in my ear. He's like, I need more from you. I need more from you. And then I really went for it. He's like, okay, now I need less.
Now I need less.
it was like, I think my voice maybe even cracked. I don't know. It's just really hard to have that big sound without getting a little shrieky. So
hey, you can't please everybody all the time. Even Vince McMahon was talking about this in the show recently. You know, they merged and all with their group. And people are like, well, am I going to do a one-off? Am I going to announce the WWE? Vince McMahon actually went public. Well, he actually said that he thinks I'm a little too over the top for the WWE, which is like the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Fantastic.
Whatever his reasoning, I don't know. What he means is
you would steal the show, Bruce. That's what he meant. That's right between the lines. That's what he meant by that. You would steal the show, and that would be a problem.
Well, thanks again, Laura. I appreciate that. But the show's not about me. It's about the wrestlers or the fighters. I just got to do my thing. Getting back to it. Thanks very much. Getting back to the show last week, which was a hell of a show. Obviously, Arnold Allen and Max Holloway was a brawl for it all. Like Dana said, if Arnold would have come out in the first four rounds, like he came out in that fifth round, it could have been a totally different fight. But that's probably the best I've seen Max Holloway in a long time. I thought he looked fantastic.
He did. And it was a different Max Holloway than I think we've seen up until that last Volkanovski fight. And I think anytime someone goes through a fight like that and makes adjustments, it's almost like he's unlocked another level to his game, because he's able to can be that high volume, violent guy without having to get into a car crash every time that he exchanges. And if you think about that, Max Holloway, that's a very scary proposition, which is why it's such an interesting situation for that featherweight division. Cause it's like, you've got Volk and Max who are really, really close, right? That last fight wasn't that close, but between the three fights, you can see that there's a lot of parity there. And then I'm sorry, but that rest of the division, there's a bit of a gap. There really is.
Yeah, there is. I have to agree with you on that one. Then you talk about the other featherweights in Barbosa and Corrantillo.
Yeah.
When they fought, and Edson just, I mean, how long has Edson been fighting? He's been in this game for 15 plus years too.
Yeah, he's been amazing. He's been in the UFC for at least 10 or 11 years.
Yes.
Well, he's highlight reel city. This guy's like two or three highlight reels that'll consistently be played. Yeah. So, you know, I was very impressed with him. Iwan Kutalaba was a monster coming in. And it's funny, every time he's in the octagon, I tell the referee, I go, look, he's probably going to try to get over to the other side. Yeah. You're not going to get there quick enough. No offense to the commission, but they never seem to move when that happens. It's me, right? So I do my walk backwards, and he just goes forward and forward and forward. Yeah. But he's a very interesting character. But he was really on target that night, you know?
He was, absolutely. He needed to be, too. I mean, that was kind of a do-or-die fight for him. And, I mean, as much as, you know, I don't like to see anybody lose, it was a super important fight for him to win in particular. And I'm glad to see him stick around, because he's an exciting fighter. I will say that every time he goes out there, you're going to get something spicy at the weigh-in, and you're going to get something very spicy in that fight. May only last a round, but he's an entertaining guy, and this is an entertainment sport at the end of the day. I got to ask you, I don't mean to make this interview my interview, but I've been dying to know this.
No, it's your interview. Go.
I feel like people are getting more and more into interacting with you as you announce them. And I freaking love it.
Thank you. I mean, I
can't remember who it was, but you guys were like nose to nose, and you are projecting, and like you're right here. The energy of that is so fun.
You know, it's fun for me too. And it's like people like, oh, the fist bump. I never instigate the fist bump.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, I know the fighter that like claims to be the first athlete to fist bump you, and he gets offended every time he sees someone else do it. That's Cole Miller, who fought in the UFC 20 times. He's been out of the UFC, I think, for like 4 or 5 years at this point.
But now,
Cole can't even be mad about the fist bump, because like you said, Laura, like they're going nose to nose at this time.
Oh, yeah. They're getting right.
Dan Hardy kind of started that. Then it got more. Chiesa gets into it. I can name a lot of fighters, a couple of Brazilian fighters. Yeah. They get right up. It's like, are you going to kiss me? What is this? You know? But it's like, it's not show business. It's show biz. And there's entertainment value there. And plus, I'm all jacked up and hyped up, you know, getting them hopefully more excited about their moment than ever before, which is my job. But like I said, it's not about me. It's about the fighter. And if the fighter wants me to get that to him, then I'm going to bring it. No question.
Are you just exhausted after these shows? Cause you're in those moments. I think what people don't realize, and it's probably less for us, cause we're behind, you know, we're octagon side, but we're not really on camera that much. But the energy that you have to give someone else when you announce at that level, or when you have that moment with them, you're literally like taking a chunk of your energy and giving it to 30 people in one night. Do you just crash?
The best way I can answer it is that it starts off at a point. I'll blast it in the beginning. Then it's like a build up to a crescendo to the main event. Yes, it's a lot of energy. Sometimes I'll sit down after getting out from the main event, and I'll sit down and go,
yeah.
like that. I'm probably the only announcer I can think of that might lose 2 or 3 pounds of water weight, you know, in those 13, 14, 12 times I got to walk in the octagon.
Yeah.
But, you know, I love my job. I love the energy I put out. You know, by the time I get back to my hotel room or something, you know, before I maybe go out or I'm just going to relax, it hits me there. It's like, oh, wow, that took a lot between interacting with the fans and the fights. And, but you know what, Laura, I wouldn't have it any other way. I love it. Yeah. You know, it's one of the reasons I train. I've been an athlete my whole life. I stay in shape. You know, I want to be the best I can be when I walk in that octagon. I mean, I've got to put it all out for those individuals and warriors, as you so well know what it's like, that are putting their blood, sweat, and tears and their lives on the line for our entertainment, you know?
Well, so, it shows that you bring your best every time. And I know that everybody that touches the sport appreciates that about you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it too. I kiss the ground every time I can wake up and say I'm the voice of the octagon. And every night I walk out there, I treat it like my first night. I've got to prove to you and powers that be and everybody that I deserve this job. I don't live on my laurels, Laura. I don't talk about the 360 at UFC 200 or whatever. I'm not that way.
Yeah.
You know? So was it 200 I did that or 100?
100.
100. I can't remember. God.
You were kind of grounded by 200. You had you just done that lip sync battle.
Oh, yeah. When I blew my ACL before three shows. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, TJ. I just got a twing on my left leg.
I'm just here to be the historical fact keeper.
All right. Well, listen, this is not Bruce Buffer's interview. This is Laura Sanko. So let's get back to lovely Laura. And I appreciate all the nice accolades. Thank you so much. Clay Guida.
Yeah.
Dana wasn't very happy with him at that interview, you know, when he was acting like he was going to retire, but he wanted to say happy birthday to his lovely mom. I love his mom. Yeah. His mom's a sweetheart.
And Clay's a sweetheart too. And I know Dana likes it, but time. Yeah, it kind of steals a little bit from the people who actually did retire. And I'm sure Clay didn't see it that way in the moment, but the reality is you're mocking it just a tiny bit by pretending you're going to do it and then not. And I actually missed that because I was backstage doing something, but my husband was like, oh my gosh, did you see the look on DC's face when he was, and he's like, he was literally like trying to wrestle microphone away from him.
I know.
I don't think people realize how important the timing is on those post-fight interviews, and they probably shoved a lot of stuff out of the way because they thought that Clay needed this retirement moment. And you literally probably, you might have scrapped a reporter's report, you might have, like, that 30 seconds to 45 seconds is huge in television. I don't think people get that necessarily.
People also don't get the fact that when you're doing those in octagon interviews as you do, you have an earpiece, you got an IFB in your ear, and you've got Zach or the director or whoever in your ear saying, like, stop it, go it, do this, do that. They don't realize what you're going through, you know, in a double-edged sword of communication at that moment.
Yeah.
So
the number of times I've had to walk away from someone who's going, wait, one more. And I just feel like such a jerk, but I'm just like, I can't.
I know. There's one emotional moment I want to mention. We already covered it. Iwan Kutalaba, when he fought Tanner Bozer, it was emotional for me seeing Tanner after that fight. He was just, he was wrecked. You know, he's a good guy. He's a tough guy, but he got demolished. It's a very emotional thing, I think, obviously for the fighters, but it's emotional for me too. And I'm sure even as a commentator on the sidelines, you get emotional. You have to.
Super emotional. And I always say this, and it's really true. Even people, say you fight a friend of mine, a teammate of mine, and you win, you know, I'm still excited for that person who won, even though they beat a friend of mine.
Right.
And even if someone I'm not necessarily a huge fan of loses, there's still a part of me that, like, really hurts for that person because I have an idea. I know on some level what it's like to how much of yourself you invest into that moment and how, I don't know, this is a weird word to use, but it's a weirdly intimate sport where you're like putting your art out there. You know, artists, I think people understand that they're expressing their emotions. And so it's a very heartfelt thing. But I think people kind of forget that martial arts, there is an art component to it. And so when you go out there and you express, this is me, this is my work, this is my body, like, you're literally not even wearing very much clothing. Like, it's you just feel so exposed.
Yes.
And you're writing that line of, like, I could come out of this looking like an absolute idiot and I could end up on someone else's highlight reel. And when you do, it's heartbreaking. It's really heartbreaking. And, you know, you can question a lot of things, which is why the mentality of this side of the sport is so important.
Absolutely agree. And one other emotional moment and a real moment of true sportsmanship in our great sport of MMA was Zach Cummings and Ed Herman, you know, kneeling on the ground, retiring simultaneously with each other. That was one of the finer moments I've seen inside the octagon.
Yeah.
Is the best way I can put it.
Yeah. What I love about that. So I've known Zach trained with Zach for probably 12 years. He was always the teammate that after practice would be like, "Hey, come here. I want to show you something." And he would take the time and notice that I was, you know, doing something wrong or I could be doing something better. Like, he's the whole reason I'm good at Darce chokes. He taught me how to do my Darce. There's little things like that that he has given to a lot of people in Kansas City that will never be known. But for guys like Zach and Ed, it's probably even more touching to me because they never had the glory, I think, that some people achieve in this sport. They never had the fame or the riches. They're still just regular guys who did this and dedicated their life to this crazy sport just for the pure love of it, right? Yes. There is never going to be Conor McGregor-esque levels for them to attain, and yet they still did it. And that to me makes stepping away even more emotional because the whole reason that you were there in the first place is just because you loved it so much.
Exactly. And listen, you're going to be a fighter. You better love it or you're going to hate it.
Yeah.
You know, no question. Laura, so now with the entry into the commentating, the backstage, everything else, where else do you see your career going? What are you're building a brand for yourself. You know, I'm a brand builder and I recognize a brand. You have, you know, a beautiful brand, wonderful personality. You have everything going for you to be everything you want to be. Do you see yourself expanding into any other aspect of sports or entertainment?
You know, that's a good question. I think if the right opportunity were to present itself, I'm always a big person that, like, I'll say yes before I say no to something. If the right opportunity presented itself and it was a neat project and a project that made sense for me to get involved with, of course I would do. But the reality is that MMA is the sport that I love. Right. And to be honest with you, I don't really do this for the money either. I appreciate earning more on a yearly basis, because to me that's like just validation that I'm doing the right thing. It's not necessarily even about the number.
Right.
So even if I could make a lot more money doing football or NBA or whatever, I'm not even saying I would be good at those things. But if that option presented itself, I don't know that it would be one that would really attract me enough to spend more time away from my family. Even if it was a lot more money, I love the UFC. I just really, really love the UFC. And I love my new role. So not that this ever needed to be announced, but I'm like officially not a reporter anymore. I only do analyst and commentary work. Uh-huh. And I guess I do the backstage quick hit stuff, but that's sort of a separate thing for the digital group. So in terms of the broadcast, I'm only going to do the desk, the ESPN desk, and commentary work. And that was always the goal, to be able to jump, you know, that to that side of the fence, which is it's a difficult thing to do. So I guess the only thing left in terms of my goals would be eventually to call a pay-per-view, but I know I'm a long way from that. So we'll see if we can get that done.
I don't think you're a long way from that.
You might not be a long way from that, Laura. I'm sorry, I disagree with you. I don't think you're a long way from that at all.
Yeah. I mean, I've had the luxury of sharing the booth with Laura at Invicta. And I mean, from the first moment you did that there, I thought you were phenomenal. And I remember, I don't know if Bruce even knows the story. Like, I got a job with Invicta on like hours notice. I showed up as a weigh-in photographer and ended up calling Invicta 11 here in LA. And I remember Laura specifically surprising me with how good she was. I had never seen her work before. She was the in-cage reporter. And I just kept going, it's Sanko. It's not Sanka. It's not that imitation coffee drink. I was so afraid I was going to screw up your name that night.
I wouldn't have cared. I wouldn't have cared at all. I was so impressed that you were able to, I mean, because I can't, that's such a stressful situation, but you made me turn about fair play in a sense. Like, you made me feel so much better, because the first time I did color commentary for Invicta was also on hours notice, if you remember.
I do. Yeah, absolutely.
Somebody got COVID. So I had to step in that day. And that's a scary feeling, but I knew I was in good hands. I mean, legitimately, I would not, probably would not have done it if it had been with someone else, because, but I knew that because you would have all of the facts and all of the background covered, and you would toss me the right type of question that wouldn't get me in trouble and make it apparent that I had, you know, hadn't had time to do as much study as I normally would. So,
I mean, it's all about prep. That first show that I did with Invicta, and probably the biggest mistake I ever made with Invicta, is I called Aspen Ladd, who was the first fighter to walk that night. I called her Angela for about a round and a half. And Kedzie's hitting me going, it's Aspen. It's Aspen. And I'm like, oh, okay, she's from Aspen. Aspen, Colorado. I get it fine.
What's her name?
No, that's her name. Yeah.
Hey, there's a couple of names that I got to be careful of. I'll tell you one they fought recently is Barbarina.
Uh-huh.
So when I write them on the card, I put a big A on the end because I have a tendency to think Barbarino, like John Travolta's character, yeah, walking right back Cotter.
Yeah.
And I'm like saying, I can't make this mistake. I can't make this mistake, you know? But if you tell yourself too many times, you're going to make the mistake.
Yeah, back when I was announcing terribly, one of the fighters that we had on that season of Contender Series was Kennedy Nzichukwu.
Oh, and God.
We still to this day can't decide how to say his name, by the way, because we all say it differently.
Can you spell it?
Yes, I can, actually.
Really? Okay, I'm going to fact check this. We're going to, this is the MMA spelling bee right now.
N-Z-E, hold on a second. Okay, N-Z-E-C-H-E-K-W-U.
If I had the bell, I'd hit it incorrect.
Dang it.
You said N-Z-E-C-H-E. It's N-Z-E-C-H-U-K-W.
C-H-U.
I did get it right on the weigh-in show. I did get it right on the weigh-in show.
Hey.
EC was so mad about that.
Just write it down phonetically on your cards. Write it down.
But I said it, I stumbled on it. The first time I know it was terrible. I was just, it did not come out cleanly. And that ended up being the whole reason why I met Snoop Dogg. Because,
really?
Yep. Because he had one of his guys after the show came up to me. He's like, hey, and he's like this huge guy, huge, just completely smells like weed. And he's like, hey, Snoop wants to see you in his trailer. And I was like, me? He wants to see you? He's like, yeah. And so I was like, okay. So I go back to, they had these like, they were basically containers, giant containers that they were using as his green room because they didn't have room at the old UFC Tough Gym. So I go into this container. I mean, as the door opens, just this cloud of smoke comes out.
I was about to say the cloud of smoke, yeah.
Oh my God. Him and this other guy sitting there. And you have to understand, even though I am the whitest Midwestern woman you'll ever meet in your life, I did grow up listening to Snoop because my older brother loved it, and every day on the way to school. So I was legitimately a huge fan. So I was a little starstruck, and I walk in there and I'm like trying to like, how do you act around Snoop Dogg? Like I'm trying to act cool, but not too cool and look like I'm trying too hard or whatever. And he just goes, girl, that African boy's name gave you trouble, didn't it? I was like, yes, sir. Yes, it did. Yes, it did.
I know Snoop, his compound is right down the street from my house.
Is it?
Like 15 minutes, 10 minutes down the street. So give or take. And I'm working with a company called Rubet now, where I'm a spokesperson for him. And he just signed with them too. So we're going to be doing some kind of a campaign together in the next couple of months.
That will be
That's going to be a very interesting day of filming, right? I'm probably going to be secondhand high by the time I get done all my takes with him. But, you know, it'll be fun. Yeah. It'll be a lot of fun.
He's super nice. He was so.
Oh, he's great. He's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. He was
really
great.
Cool. No, I admire his career too. This weekend show, getting off of Snoop, don't mean to. Because we've got a few minutes here. Are you working this weekend show?
I am not. I have a couple weekends off and I'm super excited about that.
I have a couple weekends off and I'm super excited about it too. I will see you in Newark.
Yes, you will.
Definitely there. Anyway, Sergey Pavlovich, Curtis Blaydes, Brad Tavares, Bruno Silva. We talked about Jared Gordon. He's fighting Bobby Green. Good, solid fight night show for the fans to watch on Saturday. Let's see. There's a couple things I want to talk to you about here. Do you follow football?
A little bit. I mean, I mostly follow the Chiefs, but yeah, some.
How old's your son?
He's 9.
This is what I want to talk to you about.
Okay.
This whole TikTok generation, which is now becoming business, and you know, The Rock and other people, and people are telling me I should be more focused on it too. These challenges that I see these kids do, these ridiculous things they're doing, mm-hmm. just to get noticed. Mm-hmm. I mean, they said a 13-year-old died in Ohio after participating in a Benadryl TikTok challenge.
Oh messed up. Yeah, I.
What?
It's heartbreaking. It's really.
Do you watch over your son to make sure that he? I'm sure you do. And TJ, I have to think you do too.
Yeah.
I mean, as a parent, how do you watch over your kids? Do they have? Does your son have a telephone?
No, absolutely not. And okay. No judgment if people have kids my age.
Yeah, of course.
My household. He's not gonna have a phone until he's driving. I don't care what his friends are doing. He's not gonna have a phone until he's driving, because I think, you know, even now we struggle with other things because I don't let him have TikTok. I don't have TikTok. He doesn't have TikTok. But he has YouTube, which basically TikTok just migrates over to YouTube Shorts. So yeah. He's still getting exposed to a lot of that content. We just have really strict rules, and I'm a little bit helicoptery about what he sees online at this age, just because even with that, you will not believe the questions that he asks. It's terrifying. The other day we're driving to school and he goes, "Mom, what's a micro penis?" And I was like, "Well, what's it sound like?"
You know what, Lori, you got to be careful, because my godson, I remember he was like about 11, and just on the regular side, and these porno sites do what they call phishing, you know, and the kid all of a sudden has a porno site that just comes up. Mm-hmm. And the site that came up on his desk, I won't describe it, was not anything pretty when it came to sexual activity. It was just, it was heavy. And for a young kid not knowing anything about that, right?
And I don't think people realize what exposure to that type of stuff does to kids at a young age. It gets stuck in your brain. And I mean, it's just no good. Luckily, him asking me that question was just someone was like making fun of someone having a lifted truck with like big stuff on it. And I think the person on the YouTube was like, "Oh, he must have a micro penis," and just Burke didn't know what that was. But even then, I guess my point is, like, even content that's like, okay, there's still stuff he's getting exposed to that I don't particularly love answering the questions at 9, but that's the world that we live in. And it's just a matter of doing your best every single day to not, I don't know. I want him to have a childhood. I want him to have, innocence as long as he possibly can. And I'm already seeing that compared to my, I was doing and what I was exposed to at 9 is a big difference. And I'm sad a little bit, to be honest.
And also look what COVID took away from him for 2 or 3 years.
Yes. You
know? Yeah. So seriously,
him and everybody else.
The other day, this is what I hate about my kid being online, is he says words that I don't understand exactly. Mm-hmm. So it goes both ways. He asks me questions that I'm not comfortable asking and or answering. And I have to ask him questions like, what does that mean? My kid loves Hawaiian Punch. He just had Hawaiian Punch for the first time not long ago. And there's a restaurant that has frozen Hawaiian Punch. Ooh. And I told him, I woke him up the other day, I'm like, "And after school today, we can go get some frozen Hawaiian Punch, like a Slurpee." And he goes, "You're capping." And I'm like, "What? I'm the captain? No, you're capping. Capping Crunch? I don't..." You're
like, is that bussing a cap? Is that the same?
Right, yeah. No, apparently capping means you're lying.
Yep.
So, all right, cool.
Yep.
I'm not capping. We're going to go get frozen Hawaiian Punch later.
Yeah, that's when you officially feel old, when the jargon is just completely...
I mean, I don't know any of the bands besides Blink-182 playing Coachella this weekend, Laura. So, like, when people hit me with slang, let alone my 11-year-old son, I don't know what to do.
I know. It's a lot.
I'm not capping.
No, it is what it is. We have to adapt. We have to just be the best we can be for, you know, me, for the sphere of influence I have, you, for the sphere of influence you have, but your beautiful son... You know,
hey, Buffer's like two and a half decades.
He's a good kid.
Thank you.
But Buffer's like 2.5 decades older than I am, and he's still the coolest dude I know. So
I know.
Oh, geez, God. Thank you. Appreciate it. All right. This is not the Bruce Buffer interview. This is the Laura Sanko interview. Okay. But I appreciate the kind words. So, Laura, kudos to you and everything you've done. Kudos to you and your career. It's such a pleasure working with you. I got to tell you, you are one of these individuals, man or woman. When you walk in a room, you brighten up that room. You don't have to say a word. Your presence, your looks, your beautiful smile, your positive energy that you exude, and it comes out in person and it comes out on the TV, and you just have an incredible career ahead of you, you know,
you.
Long time. And I'm looking forward to working with you for a long time, because I'm not going anywhere unless I physically can't do this job.
I know you're not. I appreciate you saying that. It's always been a really important thing to me to just lead with kindness, you know, to everybody, whether it's a camera person or someone yanking cords, or, you know, I have this list in my phone, because I'm not great with names, but I want to be good with names because I think it's important. So I have a list in my phone of like all the people that I interact with and what they do. And so I try to remember everybody's name, but I think stuff like that, especially the way that we live, it's like a traveling circus, and it can be really lonely and hard. We're all away from our families, you know, to some degree. So I think, just treating everybody with kindness is hopefully what brings that light when I walk in a room. 'Cause you know, I'm getting older.
two things based on what you said, I'm with you all the way. People don't realize, and not that they have to realize, the road that we're on, the happy times we have, the lonely times we have, the work it takes to travel and do everything that we do. I'm not asking for any sympathy, but it's not just being on camera going, hey,
yeah,
you know, there's a lot more involved. And yes, like I end the show every time, treat everybody around you with respect and be a role model to your sphere of influence. That's the key. We're all created equal. Don't try to announce against me. Don't try to fight me, but we're all created equal. You know, it's all good.
Yeah, absolutely.
All good. Laura, thanks so much. Please say hi to your husband and your son. Yeah.
Thank you,
all your relatives and all. It was a pleasure meeting them. Hope to see them again.
I will.
And I'll see you in Newark.
All right. All right. We'll see you there. Thank you guys so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Laura. Appreciate it very much. You have a lovely day and a great weekend. Okay.
All right. You too.
Bye, Laura. There she is. Laura Sanko.
Laura Sanko. Class act.
Yeah. Class act. You talk about seeing the evolution of, her growing. I was lucky enough to work with her prior to the UFC, and the amount of progress that she's made, you know, going from in cage reporter to, you know, the first woman in the modern era in the UFC to be a color commentator to really kind of owning that role as an analyst now. Like she said, it's true. There's only a handful of people that have ever worked for the UFC in a broadcast capacity that haven't actually fought in the UFC. Rogan being one of them, Jimmy Smith, who's no longer with the company, being the other. And I think the only other one that comes out to mind is Laura Sanko.
I have to get with you on that.
So
I'm with you on that completely.
Oh, we got another guest here.
Yeah, we have another guest coming up, bro. We got to talk about some boxing.
Yeah, let me bring him in right now. Press this button, and I think he should magically appear in a moment. But there he is. Tom Loeffler, kind enough to join us. If you don't know, Bruce, I called Tom's event last Friday night, Hollywood Fight Nights, at the Commerce Casino here in L.A. I was lucky enough to be in the booth 29 days earlier in Boston as Hollywood Fight Nights went east. And, man, you know, like I'll never lie and say that I'm a boxing guy. I'm very much an MMA guy first. But, Tom, thanks for coming on the show. We had to talk about this last event because you're making me fall in love with boxing because you're doing it a different way than most other boxing promoters. At your level, you know, in the regional level and building stars like Callum Walsh are doing these days?
Well, we're trying to infuse excitement back into Boston, TJ. I mean, into boxing. You know, we were in Boston in March, and then we just came April 14th. We went to the Commerce Casino out here, where I'm sure, Bruce, you've probably taken some money out of that Commerce Casino a few times.
One of my winningest casinos for poker, yeah.
So it was great to see you last night, Bruce. We love that puncher's chance bourbon.
Oh, yeah, oh, Tom went and found you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Tom came over, too. I was at Nickel Mine in the West LA area here on Santa Monica Boulevard. Great, great sports bar, too. Really great place to watch UFCs. And a ton of people showed up. Free shots of the bar. I put some live videos and stuff out on my Instagram. And who walks in but Tom Loeffler. Tom Loeffler is really cool.
That was great. Yeah, they did a nice job at that bar, and I saw Bruce go live on his Instagram, and I said, "Oh, I'm gonna go down there and say hi," because I was in the area, so that was good. Great to see you, Bruce, and got an autographed bottle down there, and it's always good.
No, it was good. It was great to see you and the people that came there. It's funny you mentioned the live Instagram because, you know, Kristen, my business partner, was there with me. And she's like, Bruce, you got to keep saying Nickel Mine. And like I said in the beginning and you said, oh, you said in the beginning, but then I couldn't hear it. I wasn't sure where it was. So like, I got to listen to my partner when she gives me some direction. Yeah. I was just so excited to have everybody around there, but very, very good experience. But aside from that, Tom, you've got an event coming up.
Yeah, we got, we just announced June 9th. Actually, we announced it in the ring when TJ was out there at that April 14th show. It's going to be June 9th at Commerce Casino, and we're bringing back the very popular King Callum Walsh. So fans are looking forward to having him back in the ring here in L.A. He just fought in Boston in March, and so we're stepping him up. This will be a second 10-round fight, and he's got to be the most popular 6-0 fighter out there, having headlined UFC Fight Pass five different times.
How old is he, Tom? He's 20, right?
He just turned 22, actually.
Okay, 22, that's what it is. But I mean, he commands the attention of the media and the fans and does so in a way where you would think he's been boxing or being in the spotlight for 20 years. You know what I mean?
June 9th, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's Friday.
You coming, Buff?
Then he's fighting again. TJ, I stepped on you. I apologize.
No, it's okay. You coming June 9th? We want to know if you're going to be in the building.
No, I've got to be in Canada, I think, for the UFC on the 10th. But then there's MSG, right? We're doing the show in, is it Newark? Newark. Cal is fighting at that I said, if you can get me, you know, talk to Dana, I'd love to announce his bout.
That's November. We haven't officially announced that one yet, but for you, Bruce, that's November, November 10th in Madison.
Oh, I'm sorry, did I let the cat out of the bag?
No, that's good. It's all good.
Okay, cool.
Those are our long-term plans for Callum Walsh. But just building on what you said, TJ, it's, you know, he's got that it factor. He's had so many amateur fights, and he's got really a good presence and his charisma. And, you know, you can kind of put him on the spot last time when I called him in the ring, and I just put the microphone over to him. And, you know, he really commands a great audience, and he's on the radar screen. A lot of people know when Callum Walsh gets in the ring now, so they're looking forward to the June 9th show.
A lot of people, including Dana White, you know, he's one of his sponsors, right? So it's all good. And listen, we had you both on the show a few weeks ago, and it was a pleasure to meet that young man. And then to meet him in person when I saw him in Miami, I think it was. Was it Miami or where did I see
him? I think it was London. You're all over the place.
It's like if it's Tuesday, this must be Belgium. I just can't remember at times.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
No, you gave him some of your cologne over in London. That's right. It was UFC London.
Yeah, he liked it too.
I'm jealous, by the way. I'm sitting over here, podcast producer for 14 years. I don't have a bottle of the cologne.
Here it is, TJ. Grab it.
Okay,
grab it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Let me grab it.
Hey, by the way, speaking of we got to show a second. Speaking of his time cologne, sold out in the UK. Nice. We have to restock now, and still the fastest selling cologne on Amazon in the United States. Nice. So get your bottle, and I'm telling you, your girlfriends, your wives will love it.
I got the bourbon. Now I need to get the cologne.
Okay, we're working on it. If I had bottles last night, I would have handed you one. But thanks again for coming down, Tom. That was really, really cool.
No, it was great. And, you know, we're building boxing on UFC Fight Pass. You know, we want to put on exciting fights. Every fight that we put on, it's a 6-fight broadcast on Fight Pass. And every fight that we put on, we really want it to turn into an exciting fight, because that's the real only way we're going to win the UFC fans to watch boxing, if we put on exciting fights again. And that's our goal. That was a promise to Dana. Like you said, Dana got 100% behind Callum Walsh the first time he met him when I flew him up to Vegas to the headquarters up there, UFC. Dana, all of a sudden, lights went on and said, okay, Conor McGregor, I can do what I did with Conor McGregor on the boxing side with Callum Walsh. And so that's the path we're on right now.
What's also exciting, too, real quick, Bruce, sorry to step on you, but, you know, Tom, the pacing of Hollywood Fight Nights on Fight Pass is just phenomenal. There's no insane downtime. Like, that's one thing I don't like about boxing, you know, at the big high level. When they do the ring announcing, there's like 58 people in the ring. Like, get them on it. We want to fight.
If I was announcing in a boxing ring doing what I do, I'd be knocking people out left and right.
Seriously.
Spinning around, I'd be hitting people. I mean, not knocking out.
You know
what I mean?
You'd be doing spinning backfist by accident, Buff.
I have announced boxing. I've announced a ton of boxing matches. I even did a whole HBO show, a Casa Mayor fight, when my brother had throat cancer back in 2008, and I filled in for him.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I enjoyed the hell out of it. You know, no question.
That's what Michael's pet peeves is when, like TJ said, when there's 20 or 30 people in the ring and you're trying to announce the fight, it should be just the announcer, the spotlight, and then the boxers. And
I agree.
But yeah, you do that a lot better on the UFC side for sure.
Oh, I love it. I've even had to tell a couple commissioners, could you please like stand over here, because I need this little area here, you know, if something could happen.
You know what I love? I love, Bruce, and I've loved this for years, is when you do this, you're like fighting, and then you say something like boop, just throw the card away.
Oh, they're in the main event when I'm done with the card. Yeah. And then I can't do this. Yeah.
And then Herb Dean runs over and picks it up.
No, actually, the doorman Herb used to do that, but now the doorman knows to always grab it when I do that. It's my little ninja card star that I throw behind me, but it's just, you know, I don't have time to do this.
Never disrespect the microphone by doing a mic drop, but that's the buffer version of the mic drop. Get that card out of here.
Yeah, we were talking about guitarists and stuff like that earlier. You know, a lot of the feeling I get from when I'm doing my thing is from watching those great guitarists do their solo acts, or the great rock singers, or even Elvis, you know, when he kind of went like this a little bit, you know, which all that.
It's all part of the show.
We all have our inspirations in life.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I was going to say, you do that fantastically. And Dave Schwartz, who I brought with me yesterday, he's your biggest fan. So
Oh my God, what a fanboy he was. It was so cute.
Yeah. He's actually, it's very understated, but he owns a Rent-A-Wreck, and Dave's a very successful business person.
Very nice. Very nice here. Very nice gentleman too. Pleasure to meet him. Real quick before we go, Tom, what's your take on Francis Ngannou sitting around slowly but surely becoming less relevant as he doesn't make a decision on what he's going to do?
You know, I can't speak much for him. I love him.
I praise him. When I say less relevant, I'm talking about in the public eye.
Yeah.
Which is something I told him on my show. I said, be careful. You can lose that within 6 months plus. You start to lose that allure, you know?
That's the great thing about what Dana has created with the UFC brand and the UFC marketing machine, is that anyone that's fighting on the show is in the spotlight and worldwide attention, and naturally, you know, getting compensated that way. And so I don't know what his decision, what went into his decision for not re-signing, but look what Dana did with John Jones, and now it's like an even bigger champion. So it's the UFC brand lives on, and you know, whoever doesn't go down that path, I think a lot of times they can definitely hurt themselves. And like you said, with Francis, you know, he was on the top of the world. Now, you know, after a certain amount of time, people stop talking about you, and you know, there's rumors about him fighting Deontay Wilder or Anthony Joshua or whoever it is. But you know, unless that fight materializes, or one of those fights, it's going to be hard for him to get back to where he was as the UFC heavyweight champion.
And then you get a question in negotiation process, which you know better than anybody, that he goes back to the UFC in 2, 3, 4 months, whatever the case might be. Is that heavy, which I know what I don't want to quote it, but that was a very heavy seven-figure offer he was given with pay-per-view points, from what I understand. Mm-hmm. And I just, would it be the same offer?
Right. Yeah. One thing I will say is, I say this about Nate Diaz too, who recently left the UFC. I think that we will see both of those gentlemen come back to the UFC at one point or another. There are fights there that just make sense. Even if Ngannou goes out and, you know, doesn't do well boxing, or if Nate, you know, comes up short to Jake Paul, like there are marketable fights in mixed martial arts that I don't think are going to be, you know, hurt or harmed by these athletes leaving. And if you think about it, like what a power play that is for the UFC and Dana White to know, like, okay, like go guys, like go do your thing. I'm not going to stand in front of that, but if you want to come home, like, you know where the real fight is, you know where the real money is going to be. And I said this last week with you, Bruce, I think we'll see Nate Diaz back in the octagon to fight Conor McGregor within the next 2 years. And I mean, something's got to develop here with Francis relatively quickly, otherwise I don't even know if anything's really going to come to fruition, and he's going to have to come back to the UFC, like you said, potentially at a lower rate.
Yeah, I don't wish that on him. I truly, truly like Francis as a human being and as a fighter. He's a fine man. I don't wish that on him at all. I want to see him get every single dollar he deserves, as I want to see every fighter, I don't care where they're at, make $1 million when they walk in the octagon.
I just don't think the interest is there to see him box in the way that maybe he thought, maybe the way that his
it
team
was.
Thought. Right, yeah.
It was, but I don't think it is to a degree, at
I mean,
least
it's
with,
been
with me.
It's been a year since he fought. It's been over a year, almost a year and a half, I think, since he last fought Ciryl Gane. So,
well, the other thing I heard on the inside, I do not know if this is correct, and please don't quote me. I'm just saying I heard this, that he doesn't have a manager. He's negotiating for himself. Tom, yourself, that's the worst thing in the world you can do.
These boxing
negotiations. I do it all the time for myself, but I'm, you know, that's what I managed Michael's career forever, so I can do that, right? But I think I can do it, but it's like, that's not, talent shouldn't do that.
And boxing is a different beast, right, Tom? It's not the MMA sort of model of negotiation.
It's very complicated, TJ. When we were negotiating the fights at the highest level, you know, Triple G Canelo fights and everything, it's like such a give and take. This person thinks he's worth that much money. This person's a champion. You know, it's just back and forth, and you can get really bogged down in the weeds if you're not experienced at that, or if you're not looking at the overall picture of how much money. So we had to make a lot of concessions, just to give an example. We had to make a lot of concessions to get Canelo into the ring with Triple G. But with even with all those concessions, Triple G still made more fighting Canelo than he would have fighting anyone else. But some people don't look at it that way. And they're like, okay, I want to have this type of a split or this percentage. And a lot of times fights get bogged down.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. Way. Hey, real quick before we get you out of here, I want to talk about the last week's show. Bruce, you might not know this, but Anderson Silva's son, Gabriel Silva, made his pro boxing debut. And just, I mean, it is eerie looking at him because he has distinct facial features that are very much like his father. People probably don't know, at least most casual fans don't know, that when Anderson first broke into the scene in mixed martial arts, he was a Shudo champion at 168 pounds, which was, you know, approximately the weight that Gabriel weighed in at for his fight. And like, man, it is... it's not one-to-one. I mean, it's very hard to say someone is exactly like their father, who is, you know, one of the greatest, if not the greatest of all time. But, man, there are flashes of Anderson inside of Gabriel. And, Tom, I'm excited to see this young man continue to grow, and I hope we can see it on that 360 stage.
You know, what was nice to see is that Anderson was there in the locker room supporting his son. He was in the corner. It was actually Anderson's birthday. We gave him a birthday bouquet of roses, and it was nice to see the support there. You know, like you said, Gabe made his pro boxing debut on the June 9th show. We're going to have his brother, Khalil, who's more experienced in the boxing ring, and he's scheduled to fight on the June 9th show. So we want to keep making the tie-in for the UFC fan base crossing over to watching the boxing shows that we do.
The Fighting Silvas.
I'm glad you're
on
doing
board.
That because boxing needs young eyeballs, right? Yep. And that's what it's going to take, amongst many other things. So kudos to you, Tommy.
Thank you. Thank you, Bruce. And I think Callum Welch at 22 years old, there was a Cain Sandoval. He was a standout in the last show. He's only 20 years old. He's 9-0 with 9 knockouts now. Umar Jambekov is 4-0 with 3 knockouts. So we're trying to put on the guys that are putting on exciting fights. And we got a nice young stable of fighters that are coming up that I think are going to be all future world champions.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, boxing's not dead. I mean, that's the thing that I've heard about for years. Oh, boxing's dead. There's no up-and-comers. No, yeah, you just got to look a little bit, and the place to look is UFC Fight Pass.
There you go.
No, that's a closed-minded attitude. Boxing not dead. It's still one of the greatest sports ever and one of the longest sports ever. No, and I love it. It's
and how can you not appreciate it?
MMA is MMA and boxing are apples and oranges, okay? It's fighting, but it's apples and oranges. Let's just look at it like that.
I mean, it's like oranges and grapefruit.
Okay, however you want to call it.
They're both citrus, you know.
I think one of the problems, to touch on that, is that boxing became so hyper-focused. I think when Floyd had that 50-0 record, so hyper-focused on being undefeated. Whereas the beauty of the UFC you know, the excitement there is that you can have 2 or 3 losses and still come back and be in the highest level fights. And it's just, you don't get put on the shelf just because you lose a fight. You don't get put on the shelf for 2 years. And that's where the UFC provides just great competitive fights, regardless of who the matchup is, whether it's a champion, whether it's like the number 3 and the number 6 contender, whatever it is. And it's they're great matchups there. And boxing is so focused on, okay, you got to be undefeated, you got to be the champion, that type of thing. We're trying to break that mold and say, look, you know, we're going to keep the guys active. That's another thing. Callum Welch this year is going to fight 4 times. He would have fought 5 times, but he's going to fight 4 times. And, you know, that's, you know, fans want to see activity and they want to see these young guys growing in the ring. And that's what Fight Pass is the platform to watch their careers develop.
Agreed. Tom, we got to close out the show. Good. Not that we can't not close you out. We can continue to talk, but TJ's got whatever TJ's got. I got to go do my thing. I got to go train and get ready for Newark or whatever.
More bourbon.
yeah, exactly. I only had 2 old fashions last night, but it's hard not to drink when you're at a bar for 3 hours.
I mean, when it's your own bourbon, too, you got to show that you like the product.
Hey, it was fun buying shots for everybody. It's a lot of fun to do that kind of stuff. But Tom, again, thanks for coming by. Good. Thanks for coming on the show.
Great seeing both of you. TJ, look forward to see you June 9th. And Bruce, we always look forward to see you in the octagon.
Thanks, Tommy. I appreciate it very much. And I'll see you. Is your office still over at Gold's?
Yeah, absolutely. Upstairs at Gold's. So whenever you're here, just let me know.
Yeah, I'll pop upstairs and say hi. You know, I'm training elsewhere now, but I'll be going back for some stuff.
Great.
Hi, Tommy. Thanks. Have a great weekend.
See you guys. Thanks. Always
all
good
the best
to see
success.
You. Appreciate that.
And real quick, the Klitschko brothers are healthy and safe?
You see Vitaly over my shoulder here. Actually, I heard Vladimir's flying into Miami this weekend for a Ukrainian charity event to raise money over there for the Ukrainian effort. And Vitaly, you know, he's the mayor of Kiev, and he's got the biggest fight ever on his hands. But Vladimir's there shoulder to shoulder with him. So they're doing okay. It's just, it's so unpredictable what Russia's going to do and the missile strikes and everything like that. It's
I know. I'm reading it. Russia even dropped a bomb on their own city today trying to get to Ukraine. So it's crazy over there. Do me a favor, because they just be my neighbors, and I know them very well. So please extend my best wishes and say hi for me when you talk to them. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, Tommy.
Okay. See you guys.
Take care, my man.
Okay. Bye-bye.